Travel is an investment, so you want your trip to be as much fun and as hassle-free as possible when you do go. Larry Mueller here. Great to have you along today on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Visiting today with Rick Seney. Rick is CEO of FareCompare.com, and he comes by regularly to help you plan your best air vacation while making sure you're a smart traveler as well. And Rick, always great to have you with us.
Hey, it's good to be on again, Larry. I appreciate it.
Well, I tell you what, it's a lot of fun. And there, you know, there are a lot of things about air travel that are a lot of fun, but they're a lot less convenient now and a lot more annoying over the years. And I think getting through security screening is pretty high on people's list of annoyances. And you have a nice article on FareCompare.com about the 7 ways to get through security faster.
Yeah, and it really starts off with sort of knowing what you're about to get into. I think a lot of people only travel once or twice a year. The rules do change from time to time, and you need to be aware of those rule changes. I think most people, at least by now, you'd think they'd be aware of the liquids rule, the 3.4-ounce liquids rule. Yep. But I actually was chatting with a TSA officer, I think it was a couple months ago. He said every now and then he carries a bottle of water through and gets nabbed, so people forget. And so you definitely do need to know the rules. I think, you know, they're trying to push a bunch of people through this new program called TSA PreCheck, which if you want to get involved with it, if you're a frequent flyer, you're probably already involved with it. But you can pay $85 for 5 years. You do have to go through an interview process. But basically, you're going to be going through a separate line, and it's as though it was pre-9/11 screening. So your shoes stay on, your liquids stay in the bag, your computers stay in the bag. You go through a metal detector instead of a body scanner, which is something that a lot of people are a little bit wary of, especially in Europe. They've talked about some of the potential health issues there.
So that, I mean, to me, that would be worth, what, $17 a month?
Yeah,
or a year, rather?
Yeah, 17. Well, it's $5 a year, so it's, yeah, so you're, for 5 years, I believe it's, yeah, it's 85, yeah, I think it's, yeah, $17 a year, but you can also actually get global entry for $100 for 5 years. It's only $20 a year, and that includes when you come back from any international trip, that includes Mexico and Canada, as you go back through the border, you get to bypass the long lines at immigration and customs.
Yeah, that sounds like a really...
I've had it for almost a year and a half now, and it's saved me at least 20 or 30 hours in the airport. And I've been in lines back at immigration that have been as long as 3 or 4 hours in Miami, and even bad at DFW airport as well.
Yeah. You talk about the TSA no-nos, and you talk about packing neatly. Why?
So I think it's really important for folks, if you think that the TSA is going to want to look at something, don't put it at the bottom of your bag.
Yeah.
Because they will scan it. They see some of the stuff that looks sort of interesting. If it's metal of any kind, pack it at the top if you think it's going to be a potential issue. At least when they go to take it out, they don't have to rip through all your clothes, and it's tough for you, and it's tough for them, and it's tough for the people behind you because you're slowing down the line.
Yeah, for sure. And then valuables. I mean, do we really need to be concerned about valuables?
There's a couple of different things you can do. A lot of people don't like to take their valuables through security because they know they're going to have to pull them out. But they're even worse in your check bag if you're actually checking a bag. Mm. There's no recourse if they lose your bag. We've had issues with them coming missing. Nobody knows how exactly. So you do want to take your valuables with you through security, but be sure and pull them all out. The easiest way to do is to have a coat pocket or something and put it with your jacket if you have a jacket, or in some sort of clothing so it's not sitting in the container. I've seen at least 3,000 or 4,000 forgotten iPhones that the TSA officers have shown me because they put them in the thing and they forget to take them with them.
Oh, man. And it is possible to at least check beforehand as to the wait times before you get to the...
Yeah, so TSA has a... You can go on the internet, or they also have an app for your phone. You can actually see what the wait times at the entrances are. It's always good to do. I know at my home airport in Dallas here, sometimes I actually go to a different terminal knowing that the wait time is 1 minute versus an hour, and then you just take the train back to your location where your terminal is. It ends up being about a 10 or 15-minute issue instead of an hour issue.
You know, and I have seen this. There's one other item, and there are many other things that you talk about in your article. But this whole business of not getting angry and being polite to the people that you're dealing with, I mean, they're harassed. And
well, you know, I'll be honest with you. Early in my flying career, I used to get upset, but I've done it so often now, and I sort of take the attitude as the pilot wants to get home for dinner, the flight attendants want to get home from dinner. These people are here; they're doing a job. Their job is to get you through these security lines as quickly as possible. They're being graded on that, and so for the most part, you know, when things happen, you know, thunderstorms or rain or delays, it's usually out of their control, and they're just as upset as you are, so it doesn't help anybody to get angry.
No.
And I've seen a few people that, by the way, that did get angry and end up in the airport pokey for a little while. So
I actually saw that myself once. A person escorted off the plane I was on because we were on hold in Detroit on the tarmac, and she would not stop complaining. And she was warned about four times, and finally they just ushered her right off.
Yeah, and they do have some rooms, and you get stuck there for 5 or 6 hours, and so that's not what you want to do because you are going to miss your flight.
Well, we have callers online. By the way, if you have a trip or a question about travel, I hope you'll join us at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. And Joe in Oshkosh has a question. Joe, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. We're two adults looking to take a trip from Chicago O'Hare to Dublin, Ireland, around September 15th through October 2nd, let's say. And wondering if it's we're looking at the prices right now, and wondering if it's we still have some time. You know, to wait to see what goes on with affairs. I was listening to Joy Cardine's show earlier this morning, and the financial advisor, Kevin McKinley, was citing some research that said that 54 days out from the trip is the best.
Well, we have the world's largest database of historical airfare, so I'm a pretty good expert on sort of when to shop and when to buy. I'm sorry. In your particular case, going to Ireland, let me give you a few simple tips, and then I'll tell you about sort of the dates involved. When you're flying internationally, you typically want to start shopping about 5 months in advance and buy your ticket no later than a couple months in advance. So you have a 3-month window, and for your September trip, you're right in that window of time period. So you're in a perfect time to start shopping for that trip. On international transatlantic flights, they have what's called weekend and weekday pricing. So on the weekends, they actually charge you more. So if you leave on a Friday, Saturday, or Sunday, they charge you about $80 round trip more than if you leave on and return on a Monday, Wednesday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, or Thursday. In your particular case, when you're flying to Ireland, you're very, very picked a perfect route because Aer Lingus flies from Chicago. So all the other locations in Europe are going to be over $1,000 for that first couple weeks in September, except for Chicago to Ireland, which is now running in the mid 800s right now.
Great.
So if you pick here's what I would do. I'd pick a weekday if you can, instead of flying on the weekends. You can flying out of Chicago right now. I'm looking at all the dates right there. The price points are all in the mid $800 range, which is pretty good right now. Let me give you a couple facts. Right now, the average fuel surcharge to Europe is $463 round trip. The average taxes and fees are $160 round trip. That means you're paying a little less than $100 each way when that ticket's $850.
That's hard to believe, isn't it?
Now, yeah. The airlines are the ones charging that big, hefty fuel surcharge, so that's really part of the fare. But that's a really good price. If you're flying out of Chicago right now, at that same time period, London is $1,100, Paris is $1,100, and Madrid right now is running $980. So you can see the big difference in flying to Ireland.
Hmm. Okay. Are these like one-stop prices that you're quoting? Or?
Absolutely, yeah. All of them are one out of Chicago. Some of them are nonstop, actually. So
okay,
you'll get
great.
Some nonstops out of Chicago, and some of them you'll connect in either New York or Washington, D.C., for example.
Okay, thank you very much.
Yeah, sure. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. And Mary in Eau Claire, we turn to you next. Hi, Mary.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Well, I was puzzled recently, and I was wondering how I ended up in a pre-check plan or with a pre-check ticket without asking for it.
You've been one of the lucky people to be selected randomly for pre-check. Except you probably didn't know what it was when you got selected, did you?
Well, I had no idea. I was starting to take off my shoes, and the TSA people said, no, go over there.
Yeah, they're trying to push at least 50% of all travelers through the pre-check line. So if you have not paid for it, you may be one of the random people selected. And basically what they're doing is they're looking at your previous flight history, potentially on your ticket, and they're picking you. In those particular cases, they should be giving you, while they're doing it, the basics, which are just walk through the metal detector and leave everything in, right? Except everybody's trying. This is what upsets people that paid $85 for pre-check, is they're putting a bunch of people in the line and they're not aware of it. Not for from their own fault. They're just not they're not teaching people along the way what that means.
Oh, okay. And this was only on the flight home. So does this mean I'll be pre-checked?
Nope.
No, it's completely random. So you could be or you may not be. So if you want to get it every time, which is not completely guaranteed, but I've been through the pre-check and global entry, you do have to pay the fee and have an interview at the TSA office, and then you basically get automatically done for pre-check.
Hmm. Oh, okay. It was very puzzling and very delightful.
Yeah, pre 9/11 screening is actually quite delightful, and going through a metal detector just doesn't happen very often in major airports anymore.
Thanks, Mary. Thank you for calling. John in Washera County, it's your turn. Hi.
Hey, great show, Larry. Very timely. I'm flying out next week, and I have a couple of vent shaft canoe paddles I have to transport via United Airlines and Air Canada. And I was wondering, I found an old gun case, a rifle case, that they fit really nice into and pack it with bubble wrap, and it looks like it'd make the trip fairly well. But my question is, should I do I have to check that, or should I just bring that on board? I think I'd probably get a few strange glances with a rifle case on board.
No, well, a lot of people carry a lot of people carry fishing rods and cases that look like that, so you won't get too many glances, actually. In order to get on the aircraft, almost every airline has to have the bag be what's called 45 linear inches. So if you measure your bag, if you can't get 45 inches all the way around it, which is width, height, and depth, then you're going to have to check it. In that particular case, it sounds like you're going to have to check this particular one, depending on how long it is. Then you have to look at the oversize rules. In many cases, that's certainly not an oversize piece of luggage, so they'll just check it for you in normal checking. But do make sure it's very well packed and bubble wrap and whatnot if it's very important to you.
Mm-hmm. There you go, John. Thanks a lot for calling.
We actually, if you get a chance and you look on the United website, just type United and guitar and see the video that the guy made after they broke two of his guitars.
Oh, yeah,
so he sang them a song a couple years ago. You'll have to check that out.
Yeah, that's a great song. Thanks a lot, John, for calling. Somebody wondered just earlier, we were talking about this random pre-check that we just had a call about. What happens if one person in a party gets the random pre-check but the others don't?
If you have any children that are 12 and under, they automatically get to come with you no matter what.
Oh, okay.
If the other person does not have it, they cannot go through. So basically only children 12 and under, if one person in your party, and by the way, I had pre-check for a while and my wife did not, and that was not a good thing for me to go through the line more quickly than my wife. So you might have to check some of the rules there. Sometimes it's just better to go through the regular line.
I can believe that. Rick Seeney, CEO and co-founder of FairCompare.com, our guest. I'm Larry Mueller. And Judith Sears Poisson answering the phone today and getting you online here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We've got a good show going on right now with Rick Seeney of FairCompare.com talking about air travel with him. And I know Mark in Madison has a question, so let's go to him. Mark, hi, thank you for calling.
You bet, thank you. I have a question regarding traveling with our two little ones. My wife and I are traveling to Portland in a few weeks. We've got a 2.5-year-old and a 9-month-old, and the 9-month-old is still on breast milk, a couple of bottles a day. So we need to travel with a week's worth of milk that is currently frozen. Any suggestions on issues or problems I might have with TSA trying to travel with milk?
No, you can actually take that through security. So one thing that people don't realize, you basically you have a quart bag, and all the elements in that quart bag have to be less than 3.4 ounce, except for two exceptions. The two exceptions are any sort of medications that may have to be taken through, or any sort of milk products for infants. So just be sure and have it in a separate bag. Pull it out ahead of time and make sure you grab the, you sort of get the person's eye, because they'll actually look through it and they'll actually take a look through it by hand. But you can take that through security.
And then, I mean, it'll be in a cooler because it's frozen.
Yeah, it's not a problem. You'll have to remove it from the cooler. Just when you do remove it from the cooler, they'll ask to look at it by hand and just tell them that it's milk for your children. Obviously, your children will be with you, so it'll be easier to do. And so you'll have no problem. But just be sure and catch their glance, so you know that they know that ahead of time. Because if they find it while you're pushing it through instead of you saying beforehand, then they get a little cranky.
Okay, and then the cooler is just my carry-on then.
Yeah, you're a cooler. The TSA is not the baggage police on what can be taken on an aircraft or what can't be taken on an aircraft. As long as it fits through the X-ray machine, they'll let you do just about anything.
Okay, thank you.
Yep, thanks a lot for calling. Ben in Green Bay, it's your turn. Hi, Ben.
Hey, guys, thanks for taking my call. I've been waiting for Rick to be on for, I don't even know, it seems a long time, but... I have the pleasure of getting invited to stand up in a friend's wedding that's going to take place in Ixtapa, Mexico, February 28th through March 7th of this upcoming year, so 2015. So I had some questions. I've listened to your show quite a bit. I can fly out of Appleton, Milwaukee, last choice Chicago, only if it, you know, really helps me out price-wise. Kind of when to buy, you know. I know you've always given tips on, you know, month, 2 months, whatever. And then if what a good purchase price might be. It is a 7-day all-inclusive type thing, Saturday to Saturday. So that kind of, I know that probably limits me on my good days to travel type thing.
Yeah, so early February is usually a good time to go to Zihuatanejo, Ixtapa. In fact, all the Mexican destinations after the first week in January drop by about 20 or 30%. Did you say you're going in the first or second week?
First week.
I'm going very end of February, the first week of March, essentially. February,
yeah, so it should be pretty good. As long as you get by President's Day weekend, as long as it's at the end of February and it's not catching sort of the spring break season starting in March, the prices go up pretty dramatically that first week in March. So if you're going in that last week in February right now, you can get a connecting flight, typically in the price point of about $550 to $700 round trip, depending on what days of the week you decide to go. I would suggest you going out of Milwaukee or one of the bigger airports. If I'm looking at it right now out of Appleton, it's way too early to buy. You need to be shopping for that ticket probably late August, early September. That's when the sales start to come up for those late February dates. So that's when you want to start shopping, and be sure and buy your ticket before the end of the year.
One more question. It's maybe, I don't know how much you know about this, I'm sure a ton, but this is a fairly large group. I live in a small town, and, you know, it seems like the whole town's going, and there's people talking about charter. I don't know how that works and if that's a viable option, or where I guess
if you have a group of about, really the only way, and it's really tough to find a charter company in some cases today because the airlines actually are running out of planes. But if you have a group of 130 to 150, there are a handful of charter companies that are out there. But you have to have at least 150 people for it to even make it worth their while.
Right. And is that a... who do you contact for that?
Just send me a note at rick@faircompare.com. I'll send you an article with some links that show you for people that charter. But in some cases, you'll only find charter companies that can charter aircraft. Even, by the way, the airlines will charter aircraft to some degree as well. You should do both things. You should look at charter and also contact the group department at the airlines, because sometimes they'll actually put another flight on if it's a specific group.
Oh.
Okay. Hey, thank you very much.
Yeah, yeah, so if you send me a link, send your email at rick@faircompare.com. I'll make sure you get the info.
All right. Thanks a lot, Ben, for calling. And maybe you can talk a little bit more about faircompare.com, Rick.
Sure. I mean, faircompare.com has been around since the 2008 time frame. We're one of nine companies that are on the airline ticket stock exchange. So we get airfare all day long for over 530 airlines. We actually have our own pricing system. So every day we price every route in the world, every hour on the hour, and we send out alerts anytime something changes. Hopefully that changes to the negative or the dropping in price, but sometimes it's when prices increase as well. And that's given us unique insights into the data as well. So we have a MetaSearch site, so you can come to our site. Everything's completely free. And then you'll end up, in some cases, to the carrier sites and sometimes the online travel agencies to do your bookings.
And that's faircompare.com. And we have a Facebook question from Samantha. Rick, when would the most economical time be to travel to Las Vegas with a family of six, two adults, four kids? We would also like to fit in a side trip to the Grand Canyon.
Yeah, there you go. Right now would actually be perfect because nobody wants to go to Las Vegas because it's 115 degrees in the shade.
Yeah.
But typically the off season for Las Vegas is the summertime. If you have littler kids and they're not in school yet, a perfect time to go is right after August 25th. We see prices drop dramatically after August 25th. So that first two or three weeks in September, if you don't have kids in school, perfect time to go. Definitely, if you're going to Las Vegas, you have to be really aware of the weather. It's extremely hot in the summertime. If you can, you can also go all the way up into October. But once you start hitting sort of the winter holiday season, a lot of people go to Vegas for Thanksgiving, for Christmas. So the best time to go, in my opinion, for perfect weather, especially if you're going to go down the Grand Canyon, it could also be quite warm, is in that September-October time frame.
Yeah. I got an email from Jim who says, Rick, you talked about the cost of the fuel surcharges. Are you familiar with the secretive world of fuel dump fares?
Yeah, I mean, this is a little bit of an urban myth, which is basically airlines having what they call positional flights or dumping flights, where late in the evening they'll actually take an aircraft that's almost empty and only move it to a new position so that it can get it in sequence for the next day's flight. I've seen a couple pundits talking about them. They're almost impossible to find. Very rarely have I seen anybody, and I've been doing this for well over a decade. I've heard of one person that's actually made it onto one of those flights, and I talked to literally hundreds, if not tens of thousands of people during that time frame. So I personally, we get the flight schedules for every flight. It's very rare does an airline put on a new flight or a moving flight at the last minute. And even then, they don't like to have anybody on the aircraft because it's really just there for positional purposes and not to have flight attendants who get scheduled at the last second. So It's a bit of an urban myth, but I've heard of it. I've just never heard of, and we have a booking site. It's very difficult to find anything that's related to that, especially at the last minute.
Steven Nakusa has a question for you. Hi, Steve.
How are you doing?
Good.
Good. I'm planning a trip from Chicago to L.A. in February next year. I was looking at February 20th as a departure. Now that you said Friday, Saturday, and Sunday are more expensive, I'm thinking maybe Thursday.
That's for international flights, yeah. Tuesday, Wednesday, and Saturday for domestic are the cheapest days to fly.
Okay.
So you could go on Saturday.
At any rate, I just wondered, I'm looking at these cheap sites on the online, and I get some prices, and it says only two tickets left at this price. And I'm wondering.
That's a little bit of a, well, it's true. In many cases, the airlines, when you're actually an agency, it'll only have inventory for a couple seats in a particular class of service. But then as soon as you buy those, they refill it.
I wouldn't
worry so much about the two seats left. If you're buying this far in advance, what you should do is go look at the seat map and see how many seats they have in the seat map, and usually it's every seat on the plane is available to you.
Okay, but is this the the best time to buy this far in advance, or what would be
Definitely if you're flying, and that's a perfect time to fly as long as you stay away from President's Day weekend, which is basically Valentine's Day weekend, February, that Monday around typically the February 17th time frame. If you stay away from that weekend, you should buy that ticket around mid to late November or early December, and that's the best time to shop for it.
Okay.
All right.
You're way too early right now.
All right. Thank you much.
Yep. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. And an email from Jason, who's looking to go to Alaska in early June next year. Best time to buy tickets, and what would be a good price?
So he's going early June next year?
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's a popular time because it's summertime in Anchorage. The average ticket price right now is around $920 out of Chicago. You want to start buying that ticket, and you can either fly out of Minneapolis or Chicago up there, or you can take a feeder flight. Depending on if you're in Milwaukee, you'll probably end up connecting in Salt Lake or Seattle. Unless you want to fly nonstop out of Chicago or Minneapolis, you definitely want to start shopping for that ticket about the February timeframe. We do see some sales kick in February. Most of them kick in for that early June timeframe and early March to late March.
All right. Colette in Two Rivers. Hi.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
We are planning a trip to Costa Rica for a month, leaving February 7th. And returning March 7th. Now, those days are a little bit adjustable. If you think we can get a better fare or somewhere around there, I've been shopping around and I'm not seeing anything that to me is a big bargain. Any suggestions you have would be appreciated.
What month were you going in next year?
Leaving February 7th and returning March 7th. It's really cold here.
Yeah. Which airport are you leaving out of?
Well, Chicago is fine. Might like Milwaukee, but I guess I also understand Chicago is probably much easier to find a flight out of that city.
Yeah, so at the moment, the price point, and these are pretty good price points this far in advance, in the low $400 to San Jose, Costa Rica. There's also another city called Liberia you can fly into, depending on where you want to connect. You're almost always going to connect. I think there are a couple nonstops out of Chicago, but I would definitely shoot for between $400 and $500 round trip. That's a really good price. I've seen them as high as $800 or $900 in peak season. And I would start shopping for that ticket in that February timeframe, typically between 3 and 5 months ahead of time. So you're looking at buying that ticket sort of in the October, November timeframe.
Oh, so right now it's a little bit too soon.
Yeah, see, here's what happens right now. For international flights, for domestic flights, almost 90% of all bookings happen within 30 days of travel. So the airlines sort of don't know what's going to happen until the 30-day mark. And they start sort of to get worried about the 90-day mark, and they start to worry and put some cheap seats in. For international, it's a longer window because people like you are actually looking much longer in the future because it's a more expensive ticket typically. So that window, they get really concerned about those flights about 5 months before departure. So if you're buying any earlier than that, if you see a great price, like $400 round trip to San Jose, Costa Rica, snap it up as quick as you can. Very rarely does that occur.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, good. Well, thank you very much for the advice.
Yep. Sure. Thanks a lot for calling. That was a good Facebook question from Kayla, who says, I have a 5:30 a.m. flight in Minneapolis-St. Paul on a Tuesday. My hotel shuttle can get me to the airport at 4 a.m. Is this enough time? They always recommend 2 hours.
Yeah, if it's a domestic flight, it's well enough time. If it's an international flight, which typically you're just connecting domestic, so out of that, depending on where you're flying. So right at that 2 hour mark, you're okay as long as you arrive there within about an hour and a half or so. They recommend 2 hours on international flights if you're actually catching the international leg of the flight. But I've seen lots of people slide in well before the 2 hour mark. So you should be pretty good. You're sure safe there.
Yeah, I would sure hope so anyway.
Yeah, you'd have to get the hotel to take you early if you were concerned about it. If I was flying to Europe or something like that, I'd make sure I catch that first shuttle to make sure I get to the airport early enough. You can also pre-check in with your international passport. So if you are flying international, you can log in, punch in all your passport information so they already have it well ahead of time.
Mm-hmm. Eric and Mesa Zomani, your turn. Hi, Eric.
Hi, Larry. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
My wife and I are going to be, or we're planning to go to Hawaii, flying to the island of Kauai.
Mm-hmm.
In March, March 17th through the 31st. Now, my wife has never flown, and I haven't flown since the 60s when I was in the Navy, so I'm sure things have changed.
I hope they've changed, but maybe they haven't.
How far out do we need to start looking for
those tickets? Yeah. So tickets. What city are you flying out of?
We'd probably be going from Madison to Minneapolis, and then from Minneapolis to L.A.
Yeah, so you're going to be on a very long trek because Kauai, there's no nonstop flights into Kauai. So you're going to end up landing on Honolulu on the island of Oahu, and then you're going to take another flight. So if you hop from Madison to Minneapolis to L.A. to Honolulu to Kauai, you are in for a long day.
Oh, yeah.
Might I suggest that, if you're flying out of Madison, you might be able to, it might be worth your while to go to actually drive to a bigger airport, because then you would change it to a one stop. Potentially, you could actually fly to Hawaii out of Chicago or Minneapolis, and then you would change it to a one stop. Or if you flew Madison, Minneapolis, two stops at the max. I definitely wouldn't want to stop four stops. That would probably be, in fact, unless you're trying to accumulate miles on your airline. You want to have the simplest connections as possible. Now, starting to shop for that ticket, again, you want to start a little bit later than 3 months before departure. So you're leaving in, did you say you were leaving in February
mid-March.
Or March of next year?
Yeah, mid-March.
Mid-March, yeah. So in mid-March, I'd be looking sort of late November, early December. That's when you're going to see some sales. That's going to be an expensive ticket because springtime in Hawaii is one of its sort of medium to high seasons before it gets a little lower season during the summertime. And you're looking at prices in the sort of $1,000 to $1,300 range round trip.
And we just got a call from Marty who said that you can get direct flights to Kauai from out of Phoenix.
They do. They have been adding some direct flights to the Big Island and to Kauai out of Los Angeles. I'm not sure you can actually catch them out of Minneapolis or Chicago. But yeah, if you want to connect, whether you're connecting to Minneapolis down to Phoenix, they have them on U.S. Airways out of Phoenix, for example. But the problem is that you're going to have to end up closer to the West Coast to find those Kauai nonstops. I don't believe there's any out of Chicago or in Minneapolis.
Yeah, there we go.
So you're saying if I would go from Madison to Minneapolis and then take a flight from Minneapolis, would there be a direct flight from Minneapolis?
You could fly Minneapolis to Honolulu. I just don't think you can get to Kauai directly.
Oh, okay.
Right. So you'd end up with a two-stop instead of a one-stop. I think you're sort of stuck at a two-stop unless you fly out of Minneapolis, and then you can do a one-stop in Honolulu.
Mm-hmm.
So if we go up to Minneapolis, we should be able to get a non-stop to Honolulu?
Yeah, and that's going to be a long flight. It's going to be a little over seven to eight hours for you.
Yeah, I realize it's going to be a long flight, yeah.
Right, and then you're going to stop there in Honolulu and get a connection into Kauai.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And Kauai is a pretty...
One more question, if I could.
Yeah.
What is the average size of a carry-on, and does it vary by carrier?
Yeah, every carrier is a little bit different, but basically the rules is around 45 linear inches. So if you take your carry-on and measure the width, the height, and the depth, I believe it's something like 24 by 15 by 9 or something like that high. So if you go on your carrier's website, and you're probably better off going on Google because it's hard to find it on their websites, but it's 45 linear inches. Almost every one that you buy as a carry-on is within that limit, but you do need to check it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Kauai's a pretty place.
Oh, it's quiet. One of the best places. Yeah, I mean, it's interesting, some of the outer islands like the Big Island, and flying to Kona and sometimes to Kauai. You can actually fly to Maui on certain cases, but most of those flights are out of the West Coast.
Mm-hmm.
So if you want to actually catch those nonstops, very rarely do you have those nonstops out of places like Dallas, for example. They do have one to Maui, for example. But Chicago, you might be able to get to Maui. But Kauai is a little more complicated to get to.
Talking today with Rick Cini. Rick is CEO and co-founder of FairCompare.com. Visiting with him about air travel, you can join in at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Great to have you listening in on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here with my guest Rick Cini, CEO and co-founder of FairCompare.com. Having a lot of fun with him today talking about air flights and streamlining security lines and how you can do that and a whole lot more. If you have a question or a comment, the number to call 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on my Facebook page. Just go to The Larry Mueller Show. We'd certainly love to hear from you. Linda in Richfield up next. Linda, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. I have a question regarding the TSA line, but I also wanted to mention for the person who had called about charter flights, mm-hmm. if it's all right to mention a couple of companies that make it real simple to get down to Mexico at that time of year.
Sure.
If you check like Apple Vacations or Funjet, that I've always found to be the most economical option out of Milwaukee or Chicago.
Hmm. Okay.
And I'm familiar with both those and would highly recommend them. So,
secondly, I travel 5-6 times a year, and no matter what I do as far as what clothing I wear, I can be practically naked, and I get singled out virtually every time for a pat down, and almost always my luggage gets swabbed down for, I don't know if that's a firearm thing or what, which I don't ever fire firearms. But
they're looking for explosives, residue.
They're something, and I don't know what it is, and they refuse to tell me what it is they saw on the scanner on myself. They just say, we saw several anomalies, and they will never specify, but I always get, and they've never find anything, of course, nothing, absolutely no underwire bra, no metal things on my clothing, nothing. But I always seem...
Well, here's a couple ways to... Yeah, they're not going to tell you why they do it. Now, they do... There's... On certain boarding passes and whatnot, they will, you know, put little denotations and markers on them. This is a perfect reason to go get pre-check. if you go get pre-check, you'll basically bypass that entire line. You'll go in sort of pre-9/11 style screening. It's absolutely the best way to do it if you can. You know, I write columns for ABC News and USA Today, so I talk to TSA a lot. I talk to their officers. You know, I've never heard of somebody – I've heard of people having trouble with certain last names, or they've gotten on the no-fly list accidentally, or the extra observation list that they have. But typically, you can actually call the TSA and contact them and make sure that you're not on one of those lists. The easiest way to do it is to go sign up for pre-check, because if you're not validated for pre-check, you'll know exactly why, because they have to tell you.
And for you, at half a dozen times a year, it would certainly be worth $17 a year.
No, absolutely. It's probably the best. If there was one thing I could buy when flying that I would have done a lot earlier in life, it would have been global entry and pre-check.
Yeah. Excellent. And that is available through every airport. If I just do it through Milwaukee,
that's
or
correct,
for Milwaukee,
yeah.
It will go through any airport.
Yeah, just type in TSA pre-check. You can actually sign up for an interview. You have to fill out a long questionnaire. The interview lasts, in my case, about 22 seconds. then once you have pre-check, then you can do just about anything you want to do. As far as getting through the airport, I've never had it not get pre-check, although they say that they don't have to do it necessarily. Sometimes the only problem I've had with pre-check is sometimes the lines are closed at certain odd times a day where you can't go through pre-check and you do have to go through the body scanner.
Excellent. Thank you so much. That's very helpful.
Yeah. Thanks, Linda. for calling. I appreciate your call. I had a friend who was got on a list somehow, and so his every time he traveled, he would get pulled aside.
We even had U.S. senators that have been on the list to get pulled aside, and they got yanked off that list quite quickly.
Oh, man. Christina in Reedstown. Hi.
Hi. I have a question pertaining to computer searches, like when I'm searching for flights
sure.
or pricing. It seems to me that the more I search, the higher the prices get. And I was wondering, are they somehow keeping my information and just, I don't know, when they figure out what you want, that they just raise the prices?
Well, there's a sort of an urban myth that's around that they'll look at your cookies or they'll raise a price after you've done one search, knowing that you're coming back to do another search. If airlines got taught doing that in any form or fashion, they would be really come down on by the Department of Transportation, which is already coming down on those. What you're seeing is basically what happens as people shop during the day. We get data from over 4 billion itineraries each day that people are shopping. In these particular cases, people are shopping a lot. Airfares are changing quite a bit. I know it feels like sometimes the prices are raising. One of the things I would note, if you're shopping for, and here's a great tip for people. If you have any party that's above one, so if you're shopping for 2, 3, 4, or even 5 people, if there are only 2 seats left and you're shopping for 3 people at a cheaper price, they move everybody up to the next higher price. It's a quirk of the reservation system. So if you are shopping for 3 or 4 or even 2 people, shop for one person first, then shop for 2 or 3 people. And if there's a difference in price, you know there's some cheaper seats out there.
Okay.
And you can actually split your tickets up. So you get 2 at the cheaper price and 1 at the more expensive price.
Okay. All right. Oh, thank you. I've always wondered about that.
Yeah, I mean, there's been a lot of articles written in the Wall Street Journal about this. They call it price jumping or looking at your cookies or if you're logged in state. They do. Lots of cookies are being dropped. Ads are flying in there. But if they actually looked at your thing and said, hey, this is the third time somebody shopped, let's raise the price, and any employee knew that that was happening and blew the whistle, the entire system would go away.
All right. Well, thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks, Christina.
And remember, those employees have family members that don't have flight privileges that have to buy tickets as well. So they're in the same position.
Heidi in Green Bay. Hi. Thank you for, get you on here. Hi. Hello, Heidi from Green Bay.
Hi. How are you?
Great. Appreciate your call.
Good. We're planning a transatlantic cruise that ends in Barcelona early May. And we found a flight from Barcelona via Istanbul and Turkish Air. When we did the multi-city option, it came out so that we could spend a couple days in Istanbul. We found fares for roughly $600 a piece. Should we be grabbing those, or should we wait a while and see if we can get
them? Why are you talking to me on the radio? Go buy those right now.
Wait.
At $600, you're not going to find anything cheaper than that.
Okay. Great. Thank you.
Yep. Go right now.
Yeah, just go quickly.
Oh, man. Larry and Baraboo. Hi, thanks for calling.
Hi, Larry and Rick. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
We're looking at 2 of us flying from Chicago to Bangkok, Thailand, but would be interested in stopping in Prague. What's the best way to try and do that, and what kind of cost?
Yeah, you're going against the flow a little bit, right?
Yeah.
Because most of those flights are going to go over the Pacific. There's a couple things you can do. Basically, this is what – and you want to stay in Prague for a few days, I suspect, right?
Yeah, it's about a week.
Yeah, so you're going to do what's called a stopover, and that's a multi-city ticket. Right now, basically, in order to have the same price on your path over, you can only stay less than 24 hours in a stopover. Otherwise, it's considered to be 2 separate trips. And it gets priced sort of as 2 separate trips. Now, you can get a ticket that way that's doing that, but it's going to be priced sort of separately. You see typically about a 20 or 30% premium on those. The exception is every now and then British Airways, for example, will have free stopovers, which means you can actually stop over for as long as you want without an increase in price. So every now and then we do see some special deals on British Airways. What city were you flying out of?
Chicago.
Yeah, so you can catch British Airways. Look for those special deals where they have stopovers.
Okay, years ago we flew through Amsterdam, and I think we flew on Singapore Airlines, but that's been about 10 years ago. And I think they just charged us $100, and we were able to stop in Amsterdam on the way back for about
it's an additional premium. That would have been like a 10% premium. Right now, the premium's about 20 to 30%, but it's not terribly more expensive to do that. The thing I would note is that you want to buy that ticket about between 3 and 5 months before departure. And if you can, go on weekdays. You're going to see a much cheaper price if you go on weekdays.
Okay. Otherwise, if we fly direct and do the Pacific route, what are we looking at? Right now, lately, I've been looking at about $1,000 for the cheapest.
Yeah, that's extremely cheap for that route if you're going that way. It's a little bit off-season right now. The cheapest that we're seeing in general right now is $1,100 to $1,200. Very rarely will you see that dip because they have the same fuel surcharge issue as well going over the Pacific. So airlines will steeply discount those tickets, but usually you have to be leaving out of Los Angeles or San Francisco before you see those big discounts.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. Thanks a lot for calling. And on to Jim and Racine. Hi, Jim.
Hi. Good morning.
Morning.
I have a traversing question. We have a flight out of O'Hare to JFK in New York with an hour and 20-minute connecting flight to Barcelona, and it's all on American Airlines. Will we be able to make that?
You will, but that's tight.
Yeah, boy.
The good news is that you're basically not having to go through security or anything, right? So you're just connecting in. So you will connect in the domestic terminal did you say you're going to JFK?
Yeah.
Yeah, so depending on where you land, it could be sort of a haul, depending on getting over to the international. Now, American booked that ticket for you, so they thought that, 90 minutes was good enough. So that's right at the edge of normally what I would recommend. Are you going to be checking bags?
In Chicago, yeah.
Yeah, so check bags all the way through to your destination. Pack light, and if you can, try to get a seat up near the front of the aircraft. On your domestic flight, typically that'll be a 737 or something, because you want to be able to exit there. And typically they'll have a person standing outside. American has a great group of people. They're in orange vests, and they'll direct you immediately to the fastest way to your location.
Do we have to change terminals at JFK?
It depends on where you land.
Okay.
So case of American, I don't believe you actually have to change terminals. So I think you're in pretty good shape.
Well, I thank you very much.
Sure.
All right. Appreciate the call. We have John in La Crosse with a question for you. Hi, John.
Hi. How are you today?
Good. Appreciate the call.
I'm traveling from La Crosse to Sacramento, California, and I'm finding that it's going to happen sometime in the middle of October. Am I trying to book my tickets too far in advance? Would I get a better price later on?
Yeah, you're definitely, for an October flight, you should be shopping right about now is a sweet spot. Maybe a little bit early on the three-month mark for October. I'm looking at La Crosse. You're going to connect into one of the feeder airports, depending on which one, probably Minneapolis or Chicago or potentially, I guess, Salt Lake City, depending on if it's still.
I noticed that they're all over the place. Some are actually, I'm at about the $560 level right now, round trip, and some of them take me to Dallas, Chicago, Denver, Phoenix, and the ones I've seen any cheaper than that are like 12 or 13 hour flights, and I don't think I'm up for that.
They have low 400s, but they're all two-stop flights, so I definitely would go on a one-stop flight if you could. And right now, for example, if you connected, I see one, for example, in early October, Saturday, October 4th through Saturday, October 11th for $490 on Delta connecting in Minneapolis on a one-stop. So you should be shooting for the high 400s, but likely you're going to get that ticket in the low 500s.
Okay, well, that's good. That's kind of what I'm looking at, but I'm not too early.
No, I think you're right on the edge of being early, but I think if you're shopping now and you see a price, anything in the upper 400s, I'd go ahead out of La Crosse. They're much cheaper out of the bigger airports like Minneapolis and Chicago, about 30 or 40% cheaper. But out of La Crosse, I definitely would be shopping right now. You're okay to continue shopping for another 2 to 6 weeks if you want to and see if the price drops a little bit. But definitely if you see anything in the high 400s, go ahead and pick it up.
Mm-hmm. Okay, good advice. Thanks.
Thank you very much for calling. Somebody wondered about Groupon. Are the trips you see through Groupon, are those a reasonable deal?
Yeah, so any kind of coupon, including Groupon, they have pretty steep discounts. The problem with some of those is you don't get a real good choice on the flights that you pick. Think of it this way. Groupon would be similar to sort of Priceline 7 or 8 years ago, where you had to name your price, but you didn't know which airline and what time.
Yeah.
Right. So you have to be really wary of those coupons. If you get them on Groupon, for exactly what the rules are. And sometimes the rules are several pages.
Our guest today, Rick Seney, CEO and co-founder of FairCompare.com. He's going to be with us right up until 12:30 today. We'll take a quick look at the news, weather, and then we'll be back with Rick. Stay with us. Great to have you listening in on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here as we talk with you today about travel and air travel in particular. It's a lot of fun to do it. Sometimes it's a big hassle. Trying to get a good flight at a decent price. But Rick Seney helps us out. He's founder, co-founder, and CEO of FairCompare.com. Helps us navigate the world of airfares and keeps you and I informed about trends that are going on in the industry. Rick, always great to have you with us. Thank you so much.
Oh, you're quite welcome.
It's a real pleasure. And we have lots of callers online already. That number is 1-800-642-1234. Email at talk@wpr.org or post on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Lynn in Menominee up next with a question. Hi, Lynn.
Hi. I'm planning a month-long trip to Central America for next winter, and I'd like to be visiting El Salvador, Nicaragua, Honduras, and Guatemala. Wondering about typical fares between major cities in those countries, and about the safety of the airlines. What airlines are operating there?
Yeah. So if you're talking about Central America, are you going to be dipping into South America at all?
No, just those four countries.
Just those four countries. Yeah. So most of the U.S. carriers fly in there. So I definitely would recommend those. You also have some of the airlines like Avianca, I think, flies in those particular areas. There's some low cost carriers. I think Interjet, which is out of Mexico, actually has some flights in there as well, depending on what you want to do. It's not my particular area of expertise flying intra Central America, but I know the cost from the U.S. into Central America during any sort of winter month at the moment averages around $550 to $700 round trip right now. For wintertime travel, and the lower end of that is what you should be shooting for when you get your ticket down there. How you hop around, easily is not something that I'm quite familiar with.
Thanks.
Mm-hmm. Thanks a lot for calling. And I have some wild experiences, especially traveling in Nicaragua from many years ago.
It's just not an area that I get a lot of questions on, so I don't study it a whole lot. But I'll make it a point. And by the way, I did look up all the flights into Kauai the other day, and they're all out of the West Coast. So
they are.
My recollection was correct.
Okay, good. That's good to know. Kelly in Fond du Lac has a question. Hi, Kelly.
Hi. We'd like to take our family to someplace warm, and we can actually, before Christmas time, like 19th, 20th of December, and just want to go Caribbean, Mexico, whatever, someplace warm out of Wisconsin. And we can fly out of Milwaukee or Chicago. Just wondering, is it better to do those all-inclusive with airfare, or is it better to separate out and buy the inclusive resort package separate?
Yeah, I wish there was a good answer for that, because sometimes they include airfare and highly discounted, and sometimes they don't. So okay. It depends on where you want to go and whether or not you should buy a la carte or not. I will tell you that about December 17th or 18th is what airlines consider to be Christmas. So if you can leave just a day earlier, the prices are typically about 30 to 40% cheaper.
Okay.
So at least on the outbound flight. So if you can go just a slight bit before the 17th or 18th, one day or less, just remember there's a break point where one day somebody steps on the plane, they're going to pay $400 more than the person that stepped on it the previous day, right?
Right.
Because the prices to all...
And do you know...
Yeah, go ahead.
Then do you know, it seems like, you know, we take a trip out every year and... it seems like the travel agent can actually get it cheaper than I can find online. Is there
in some cases, travel agents actually are connected to a network of places that have discount contracts. That doesn't happen that much in the United States. There's more discount contracts if you're going to Europe or Asia, for example. So they'll try to find you the best fare. Usually you don't have as much flexibility as shopping online yourself. But travel agents do have access to cheaper fares from time to time. If you have a really good travel agent, they're typically connected to large networks where they do have some discounting going on. But again, so let's look at the warm weather destinations. If you're going to Mexico, the most expensive is going to be Cabo, and the least expensive is going to be Cancun.
Okay.
So if you're looking at those particular ones,
go ahead.
Yeah, no.
Cancun would be better.
Well, again, you know, some people are worried about Cancun. That's why the prices are a little bit cheaper. You have Playa del Carmen, which is on that's down in that area as well. You can go to the other side, which is Cozumel. That's sort of the second cheapest behind Cancun at the moment. You can also go into Central America. Costa Rica is quite popular, and the prices have come down pretty dramatically because a lot of new flights there. You certainly have the entire Caribbean. The cheapest is going to be Puerto Rico and the Bahamas compared to some of the other outer islands. So those are some options that you have, especially if you can go in that little sweet spot right before Christmas time.
Okay. And then one last question. If I do it myself, how far should I start looking?
For that kind of Christmas travel, as long as you're going before the 17th or 18th of December, you should start looking here in the next month and a half or so. But you're a little bit early right now. But if you're going for Christmas and you're going to slide into that window at Christmas, you can shop right now because really at Christmas time and anything warm, it's all about getting a better bad deal.
Yeah.
Okay.
There we go. Good luck, Kelly. Thanks a lot for calling. Dick in Cross Plains, your turn. Hi, Dick.
Hi there. Doesn't sound like an air travel thing, but it will be in a second. I'm at the point of renewing my Wisconsin driver's license, and they're going on about how I can get a real ID license, and I was wondering if that affects in any way my expedited air travel.
Well, you do have to have some form of when you're on air when you're going on a flight, you do have some form of identification that's a legal identification. I actually was renewing my license, and I had a piece of paper that said, "Hey, he's in the middle of renewing his license," and they actually went and took the thing and called it in at the gate. So that was the only way I could get through. I didn't actually bring my passport with me. So if you have a passport, you can obviously use that as well. So you can actually get through. It's no problem, but it will take you a little extra time, so get there a bit earlier.
But the term real ID in quotes doesn't mean anything in particular to you.
I'm not
a driver's license is a real ID as far as I know.
Yeah, I don't know if there's a special ID. Every state's different on what their driver's license requirements are, but if you have a official ID, and if there's something you want to contact TSA, I would definitely look at TSA if you have a form of ID. But if it's a standard Wisconsin driver's license, you'll have no problem at all. If you're in the middle of renewing it and you don't have the physical license, sometimes they cut the top of it off when you go to renew your license, and then they give you a piece of paper, and then they snail mail you your actual license. It may take anywhere from 2 to 3 weeks. Then that piece of paper will act as your official ID.
Okay, thank you.
Yep, thanks a lot for calling. Alan in Waupaca, hi, thank you for calling.
Hello. I am going to be going to Johannesburg, South Africa, and I need to be there probably on December 3rd of this year. And the tour company we're using is offering a flight, but I was just wondering whether or not scheduling it or buying it separate from the tour, what I could expect as far as costs go.
Yeah, so that typical cost right now to Johannesburg out of Chicago, for example, would be in the mid to low $1,100 range. I see, for example, Lufthansa at $1,127, Delta at $1,164 right now, British Airways at $1,188. British Airways probably has the most flights into South Africa if you want to have some options there. But if you want a one-stop flight out of Chicago to Johannesburg, you're typically going to stop somewhere in Western Europe and then fly on to South Africa.
The tour company is offering a flight that goes Chicago to Dallas, Dallas to Johannesburg.
That's a pretty good connection right there as well. So any sort of one-stop is good. I don't know what the pricing is for that particular one. They do have some nonstops out of the East Coast to Johannesburg. If you're going sort of through the northern quarter, you're typically going to go through Europe.
Okay. But you're thinking $1,100 or $1,200.
You shouldn't pay more than $1,200 for that ticket in early December. Right, so you can connect to Johannesburg through Atlanta, for example. It sounds like they have one out of Dulles, and then they have several connections out of New York into Johannesburg. A lot of people that fly out of Chicago will fly to Europe first because it's an extremely long flight, and sort of spend the day or a couple days, and that's why you see a lot of flights, people connecting in London or in Paris, for example.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and British Airways, does that, when you use the discount search engine, does something like British Airways, is that in that search?
Absolutely, yeah. American and British Airways are partners. Typically, they actually do their flight schedules together for those particular flights. So you'll see British Airways and or American on all those engines.
Mm-hmm. All right, thank you.
I've flown British just a few times, but every time was great.
Yeah, sometimes they share different aircraft, and so like out of Chicago, you would go through Heathrow, but the only place you can really get to Johannesburg out of the U.S. is Atlanta, and it sounds like they have actually probably not an everyday connection out of Washington, D.C.
Sherry wonders, when's the best time to travel to Bali for the weather, and what are the best fares? We're in Madison. Want to take the honeymoon we never had
it's
for
not
a couple
easy.
Weeks.
I get the Fiji, Bali question almost every time I'm on a radio show, so I'm pretty well prepared for that one. It's actually a very expensive ticket, usually in the $1,500 to $1,800 round-trip range. You're going to take a smaller aircraft to get into Bali. My wife just won't let us do that. So if it doesn't have jet engines on it, we don't fly. So it's rough for me. I'm going to have to paddle my way to Bali sometime. So it's in that range. Really, it's a tropical climate. You can go almost any time of year. The price doesn't drop that much. Really, what you're really paying for is the distance that it takes and plus sort of the inconvenience on taking some of the smaller airline. So you can pretty much go any time of the year. I'm not as familiar with their rain and weather patterns. I know it's sort of a tropical environment, but I'm not sure which months they actually have more rain than you probably want to deal with there. Mm.
Sandy in Eau Claire, thanks for calling. Hi.
Hi. Say, we have a group of seven from Eau Claire that would like to fly west and then take an Alaskan cruise next summer. However, my husband and I would like to cruise just one way so we could spend some additional time there and then return by air. So we're trying to figure out how that might work.
So if you're going to cruise, you can probably either start off in Seattle or Vancouver, depending on your one. It's going to be a lot cheaper to do it in Seattle.
Okay.
On your particular ticket. So although Vancouver is, I like Seattle too, but Vancouver's an awesome place to visit for a couple days.
Is it correct though that you can't go one way if you're going within the same country? So Seattle to Alaska wouldn't be allowed one way?
You mean from a flying perspective?
Yeah, no, like if we just want to cruise.
Oh, I'm not as familiar with cruises, but I'm almost positive that they would charge you the round trip price and let you get off. So I don't know if they actually have one way cruising. I'm not a big expert on cruising. I'd have to get one of my friends that's much better in that, but I would expect that they would not, because you don't see that happen very often. Now, you do see it happen on Atlantic crossings, where you're going from Florida, for example, to some place in Spain when they have one way and you fly back. But I rarely see them on Alaskan ones. So you'll have to find somebody that's a little more up to date. But from a flying perspective, if you're flying back from Anchorage, If you want to spend some time in Anchorage in that particular area, you will be able to find a one-way ticket, no problem. It's going to be a little bit pricey, probably in the sort of $450 to $550 one-way price trip, round trip range. I mean, excuse me, one-way range.
Mm-hmm. Okay,
the tickets are much higher, like $800 or $850 round trip.
Okay. And that would be back to Minneapolis or back to Seattle?
Yeah, that's the bigger airports. You can add on another 20 or 30% if it's at a regional airport like Madison or Green Bay.
Okay. Great. Well, thank you very much.
Sure.
Thanks very much for calling. We have a question, an email from Patty. We're planning a trip in December with my father and adult son. All of us are World War II history buffs. We would like to be able to go somewhere warm at least for part of the 10-day-long trip. Right now, we're considering 3 to 4 days in London, but then need to consider where else to go that might have some warmth and sun, World War II history.
Well, that's a good, and I'm a World War II buff, too, so I've been to all the sites in London. I've been to, I think, London a little over 40 times.
Oh, boy.
So it's on my cruising path in many places. So definitely London. There's lots of stuff there. As far as being warm, it's London is sort of like being in, Vancouver or Alaska somewhere. It's not all, it could be summertime. I guess it's more like San Francisco. Treat it more like San Francisco, where it could be the coldest summer day of your life.
Yeah.
If you want to go to London, certainly the peak period is the summertime. That's when everybody's going. That's the most expensive. Now, if you're heading towards Germany, I mean, one of the things that I got a chance to do was go to Berlin recently, and it's got some awesome historical places you can visit, and especially in the former Eastern Berlin side. So I definitely would, if I was going to do that kind of trip, I would definitely do a little bit there in the London area and then go over to Berlin. If you take British Airways, they have several ways to do that. Also, you can just fly to London and then take a low-cost airline. In my case, I took a low-cost airline called Air Berlin between London and Berlin, which is like the Southwest Airlines, for example.
We have, and Judith says Air Berlin is awesome. She likes flying Air Berlin, too.
Yeah, I've been on it a couple times now, and it's sort of no frills, but, I mean, I think that's what everything is in the U.S. now.
Yeah, absolutely, exactly. We have Bill in Winona, Minnesota, up next. Hi, Bill.
Hi. I'm looking, my family are looking going over to the Philippines this winter, probably January, February. We're open. But we also work and know dozens of people that go over there every year. And everybody's always talking about trying to find the best fares and any tips. And, you know, it just seems like it changes constantly on flights going over there.
Yeah, probably wouldn't want to be there this week with the weather.
Yeah, the weather's a little rough right now. So the average price to Manila, for example, and by the way, the Philippines were a very hot spot for the old Continental Airlines with Guam and some others and United. So there's some good flights out of there, but you're typically going to take an airline like ANA or maybe Korean Air, which is probably one of the cheapest. You can take the U.S. airlines. They tend to be much more expensive. So, like right now, you know, for early December, for example, to the Philippines, $1,100 round trip on ANA, for example, and I think it's $1,290 on Korean Air right now. So your trip's going to be in that $1,100 to $1,350 to $1,400 if you do it in the off season, and then if you do it in the peak season, it jumps up about 20 or 30%.
All right.
Years or not long ago, there used to be like consolidators, like places you could go. My understanding was they'd buy up a lot of tickets at a lower price and then sell them. There was one place in the East Coast.
It's more like charter carriers in that case where they bought up seats. That you don't see that very often. You do see out of the West Coast, for example, to the Philippines, because they have a large population there, you'll see travel agents that service the Filipino community and expatriate community from Philippines and some of the military community, because there's several military bases over there. You'll see some discounts anywhere from typically 10 to 30 or 40%, but you have to find a travel agent that can hook into that network.
Thanks a lot for calling, Bill. Appreciate it. We had a Facebook question from Bob. We're a retired couple who have great flexibility in terms of timing and places to travel. For long flights, I prefer business or first class. Is there an easy way to search for reasonably priced first or business class Last year, we flew to Belize on business class for only $150 more than economy.
Yeah, so it depends on your status. Typically, moving into business class and first class, outside of just buying it on the open market, rarely are those cabins bought outside of companies buying business class for folks or upgrading to business class. You could certainly do the quotes. There's not a lot of deals. Typically, you know, first and business class are somewhere around 2 to 3 times the coach ticket. So if you're flying to Belize, in that case, you know, you were on a flight that was not very long, and upgrading probably was something you could easily do for $150. Going to Europe, for example, the average sort of ticket price, if you want to look at sort of all-in cost, a little over $1,000. The average business class right now is about $4,500.
Oh.
Round trip. So you're looking at 3 to 4 times. Now, I last year and every year, United and formerly Continental would do a deal to London where it was like $1,700 round trip first class out of certain hub cities like Houston and Newark and Cleveland at the time. So you will find discounts on those. The best thing to do with first and business class, if you want to pay full fare, is to talk to a travel agent, because some heavy discounting goes on if you do talk to a travel agent. And if they're hooked into a couple of these networks that have discounted, you'll at least save yourself $1,000 or so.
We had a Facebook question from Beth. Is there any reason to get the pre-check status if you have metal parts that set off the metal detectors every single time?
Yes, because you still get to put your bag on. You just tell them that you're going to have metal parts. They will scan you, but you're still going through a metal detector. In most other cases, you're going to be going through the body scanner. It's slower, the lines are longer, so it's definitely worthwhile.
And Donna, a quick question from you.
Well, here's what I would say, too. I would also do global entry, which is only about, I think, $15 more. And that way, if you're flying internationally, you get to bypass the lines coming back.
All right. Any good deals out there that we should be aware of, by the way?
Well, there's good deals all over the place. You know, this particular time of year, if you're willing to leave after August 25th, that's the magic departure date. That's when airlines say, hey, kids are back in school and we've got a discount a little bit. If you're leaving on Tuesdays, Wednesdays, and Saturdays, I was looking out of Chicago and Minneapolis and Milwaukee. I found at least a dozen cities under $300 round trip that were over 2.5 or 3 hours of flight time. So you can fly to places like Miami and Southern Florida. Sometimes it's Fort Lauderdale if you're heading south. There's also some tickets into Canada that are cheap out of those areas right now. Vancouver, Montreal, Toronto at some of their lowest prices, $360. Boston right now is running very cheap at the moment. So is Washington, D.C. So out of that area, you can find some really good deals right now. If you're flying on the weekends, however, extremely expensive.
Boy, it's a great pleasure as always, Rick. Thank you so much for taking time to be with us today. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you, Larry.
Rick Zini is CEO and co-founder of faircompare.com. That's his site. Go to that to learn more. faircompare.com. And Rick Zini, sometimes you can just email him direct, as he often points out on the show. So, great to have you listening in. Tomorrow we'll take a look at water. Limnology is the study of fresh water, and we'll find out about the research going on in Wisconsin to protect our water. Stay with us here on the Ideas Network.